And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello, and it's an emergency podcast. Jurassic Pod is back. I'm Eric Corrine from The Athletic. With me, as always, Holly McKenzie. But look, we don't have time to talk to her right off the bat because we have breaking news. The Summer League schedule is out. Air horn, air horn, air horn. Holly, how's it going?
Okay, you scared me. I was like, hold on, we didn't talk about an emergency thing. And then when you were like, breaking news, I was like, 2 seconds ago, there was not breaking news. What has happened in the past 2 minutes? Hi.
How are you? Have you recovered from the press releases?
Yeah, I'm doing okay, I think. I'm just trying to wrap my head around a world where Summer League is almost here again somehow. I'm not sure how.
It's the passage of time.
I'm
for it as opposed to the alternative, I suppose.
Listen, it's draft week.
Yeah.
Draft day, A. Wiggins. he's doing the not parade today, kind of parade today.
I haven't read anything about that. So what's happening? Like, why?
I don't know why.
I assume it's something to do with the pandemic, maybe.
Super informed we are.
Yeah. We're not a Warriors podcast.
We
have like six of those on The Athletic Network.
The Warriors are celebrating their latest and newest championship. You know how good it must feel to have won so many championships that you get to say your like latest and greatest championship, not just your championship. Anyway, they're celebrating that today. And among the Warriors who are celebrating, Andrew Wiggins, who I am just beyond thrilled for. So, yeah.
Yeah, he was awesome in the NBA Finals as both a defender on, I think first and foremost, a defender on Jason Tatum. But also on the glass and scoring when the Warriors beautiful machine, I don't want to say broke down, but couldn't produce reliable offense against a very, very good defense, mm-hmm. especially in that game. I want to say it was game five, mm-hmm. Wiggins, mm-hmm. like with just several attacks, to score, and just, in isolation more or less. And, it's sort of funny that Wiggins had been getting, a modicum of praise after, leaving a situation in Minnesota where he had to do that however many times a game. And he became known as this defensive guy, this weak side shooter, this. And then in that game five, it's like, oh, yeah, like maybe I wasn't, exactly the guy to be doing that 30 times a day, but if you need me or a game, but if you need me to do that 10 times a game, it might be all right. It certainly was all right. He was probably the second most important Golden State Warrior in that series overall.
Eric, there was actually talk for a period of time during the finals about whether Steph would win Finals MVP if the Warriors won, or if it could go to Andrew Wiggins. I'm glad that it went to Steph Curry, but that's how good he was.
Yeah, the fact that there was, I think most of what that proves is there are two off days in between all but one games.
But he legitimately was, I would say their second most important player. And also, like, just the fact that he became the guy who, when the Warriors needed something, whether it was on offense or on defense, he was like the reliable person to step up and deliver that. And that is not an easy thing to be, not an easy thing to do. And I thought Klay Thompson's quotes immediately after the game when he said, I used to do that. That used to be my job. It's really hard. Like, he made my life so much easier. And he's, you know, he said he has to play defense on the best player and then come back down and score on the other end. That's really hard. And first of all, Klay Thompson.
Holy cannoli. King. Holy cannoli.
King. Cloud 109. He's a king. I love that man. I just want him to, I mean, I'm sure his life is pretty great and he doesn't need me to wish great things upon him, but I just want Klay to have all good things always, ever.
You have gone so all in on calling people kings.
Who else have I called a king?
My dog, for one.
Well, he is the king of your house.
Yeah.
That was a different kind of king. That was
but
like...
I think you called Christian Leclerc a king. Leclerc? Leclerc?
Christian?
No, Charles, sorry.
No, I don't think it was Charles. I do feel like there was an F1 tweet, though,
that I mean, there were many F1 tweets on Sunday. My guy, Max Verstappen, unstoppable.
Yeah, he's incredible.
He is my guy.
What made him your guy?
We were just discussing this when you had been noted as a huge F1 fan, and I decided, because I had heard he's a bit of a malcontent, that he was my guy based on...
But this is what I meant. I just meant, like, have you watched it since then?
No, absolutely not. But literally, that's all. And
you picked a once-in-a-generation driver, so...
My guy is killing it.
I think you need to get familiar with Yuki Tsunoda. I think you would love him. He's become like he and Pierre Gasly. They've kind of become like my second faves. Maybe everyone's just tied at number one. But anyway, Yuki gets very, very angry on the radio, and he's just constantly swearing and screaming. And then he always apologizes really like nicely, and it's just. He's hilarious. He's great. I love him.
While you were watching F1 on Sunday, today's Monday, and while you're hearing this, it might be Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday or who knows, you know, sometime in 2024. But while you were doing
2023?
No, I mean, any year. It could be any year, unless this gets erased from the internet, which, you know, who knows? We might say horrible
things. Oh my gosh, I'm so
things.
Sorry. We can go back to what you were saying, but I need to say this before I forget. When you... said something about machines breaking down.
Yeah.
I've already forget what that was. What were you saying?
I don't know, Holly.
You said something at the beginning of this podcast about machines breaking down, and I needed to say, have you ever seen the movie WALL-E?
Oh, I saw that you watched it. I have not seen it.
It's been, goodness.
It's been high on the list of, certainly highest on the list of Pixar movies I have not seen to see. And I know that it is regarded as like top three and by many people. I sort of feel like WALL-E was the beginning of Pixar being taken as like high end adult art. I could be wrong on that. People have studied this a lot more than I have, but I remember when that came out and it sort of changed the conversation that I was aware of.
It changed
about,
the game.
about Pixar. But you were crying.
Goodness. Like, no, I had one of those headaches after watching the game from being dehydrated from crying so much. I didn't know what it was about, had no idea the premise, concept, anything. I didn't know it was going to be sad, emotional. Like, I hadn't, it's not even that it was, it was sad, but just. Wow, I was blown away. And when you mentioned machines breaking down, that's the first thing I thought about. I cried within like the first like 12 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
And that's when I kind of was like, oh shit, I'm really in for it. This is going to be an event. I just want everyone to watch this movie and you'll realize the love and affection you feel for a not human thing. It's just beautiful. It's a beautiful movie and I love it so much, and I could get like, I almost could get emotional just talking about it again. I don't watch movies as you
well, you
know,
did consume the whole Marvel universe, but you don't,
well, yes,
you didn't go to
but
theaters.
But that's the thing, when I tweeted about
time.
WALL-E, so many people tweeted me back and said, I can't believe you haven't seen this, or this seems like a you movie. And I just feel like I need to explain to people, like, when I say that there was a period of time that I didn't watch movies, there was literally like a 20-year period where I did not watch movies or TV. Yeah. So very into it now. Love sitting on the couch and being entertained and not using my brain. But there's so many movies that I haven't seen, so I kind of feel like I'm catching up. And this movie was incredible, and now I just want to watch all Pixar films.
Have you watched any others? We're so far afield. This is going to be the biggest digression of all. I thought like starting with the Summer League a joke emergency announcement was going to be a digression, and now we're like three digressions away from that.
Listen, I'm sorry. It's the off season. We can talk about things. We can do our Marvel episode, maybe. Guys, I might be able to convince him. I know you're all dying to hear me like butcher the Marvel universe and talk about that. Someone explained to me very nicely, it was one of the nicest exchanges I've ever had on Twitter, that the
low bar
what is the Morbius, is that what the movie's Mobius? Called?
I don't know.
Mobius. Yeah, it's probably not Morbius. That it might sounds be. Like morbid. Whatever it is, that movie, I was like, this looks awful, don't want to watch it. Marvel, you've lost me. And I had like multiple Marvel people, but one very nice guy who was a very, very, very large Marvel fan, very patiently and painstakingly explained to me that that is not a Marvel movie. It's under a different umbrella, and it shouldn't be considered a Marvel movie because, like, that would be like a blight on the Marvel like cinematic universe.
So it's not canon. Is what he was saying.
Which I didn't know, but I really did appreciate. So yeah, if we do a podcast, I'm sure we'll get lots of those. But anyway, recent movies. Turning Red was a...
Yeah,
was
we watched that movie. One for my film club.
I didn't know you had a film club.
Yeah, you did know that. You just forgot.
Oh, with Lindsay, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, sorry. Film club made it sound a little more intense.
Oh yeah, it's supposed to sound intense. That was part of our coming of age... block where everybody got to choose a coming of age movie.
Who chose this one?
This was my wife's choice.
Great pick. Loved the movie. So cool to see Toronto.
I like, wanted more Toronto, but I realized they can't just make a movie for Torontonians. But it's like, once they had that, what was it, a Daisy Mart reference? Like, I was like, all I want is this.
I loved it so much for so many reasons. A very important movie. And if you don't like it or you want to criticize it, you suck and you should self-examine. You should self-reflect. Yeah.
Anyway, next week we'll have some more 14-year-old movie reviews from Holly McKenzie. Holly did come out in 2008.
Oh my gosh, we also watched Unbreakable. I also watched Unbreakable.
That's even older than that. That's got to be like 21 or 22 years at least.
Yeah, I think it's 21 years old. I absolutely was furious at the ending of that movie. I will not talk about it. We don't need to like spoil anything. Not that you can spoil anything that's 20 years old. Furious, angry, don't want to talk about it. Okay.
The thing I was going to say beforehand, which we don't need to reflect on anymore, is that while you were watching F1, I got like my first heart palpitations because of the Jays on Sunday.
Yes.
Could not deal with that game, could not deal with that series. The Yankees are too good. The Jays bullpen needs addressing.
You're also,
I hate it. I hate
Someone
it.
Someone said to you, why are you so mean?
Yeah, I didn't think that was called for.
I did.
I was.
Because that's what I thought too.
I mean, you say Kikuchi is driving me crazy.
Listen, stop it.
He's driving me crazy. He's got to, like, okay. Just throw strikes, man. I hate it. I hate it. The most frustrating thing, even though I know it's not his fault, he's not trying to underperform, but this is the thing I get to be an irrational fan about. Like, watching a pitcher unable to locate his pitches, like, I'd rather see a guy just wiped out by home runs rather than, like,
here's
walk,
my thing.
Walk.
I think you're correct. You are being a fan.
Yeah,
and this
I fully admit that.
Typical fan behavior.
Yeah.
But I think I don't like fans. I love fans. I love fans in theory.
Yeah.
I love fans when they're happy. But the normal fan reaction, like that you had, where you were saying, just throw strikes, like, you think he's not trying?
Yeah,
oh,
no, I'm aware.
You from your couch are going to criticize a player who's doing something that you could never do. And this is why I think this is one of my realizations over the pandemic. I don't like the full fan experience. I only like the good side. I don't like when fans criticize. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I feel upset.
Yeah, it's just like my anxiety about the Jays' long-term hope, which of course is like so unimportant turned into like turned into something that is not anxiety, so I don't have to feel like that. So it's just like turned into like online rage.
You did get very angry though, and that's why when that fan said to you, like, you're being mean or you're like, come off it. I forget what the tweet was, but I was like, yeah, like that's how I feel.
Oh, yeah.
I almost was going to message you about it, but I was like, no, I got to just let him do this because he's just being a fan.
That's funny.
And I always have these moments.
I was talking to Caitlin McGrath, the Jays writer for The Athletic, on Thursday because she saw
Subscribe to The Athletic because Caitlin is awesome. Because
she saw me on the Jumbotron at the Jays game on Thursday, which they lost 10-2.
Oh, wow.
Second time I've been on the Jumbotron this year.
It's all happening.
And she was talking about how angry Jays fans are about a team that's like on pace to win 95 games, which is... but you know, like,
listen, the Yankees, that was all bad. Like, that was all just extremely.
The Yankees are awesome. And in the words of Ida Maria, expectations are such a drag. We should bring this conversation.
I know. I'm sorry.
Back to basketball. Since,
I was going to say, I was going to do that. And my segue was going to be, I don't like the full fan experience I've learned. And to get to the Raptors, I really still am upset that fans chanted what they chanted at Joel Embiid. I didn't like that. I still don't like it.
Yeah.
I've thought about it. I've had time
to reflect. Yeah.
And I think that sucked. And I think the reason it came up is because in the finals, Boston fans did that to Draymond Green. And yeah, I just think that's lame. Like,
let's get a bit more
chant
creative.
Something better.
Yeah. Let's get a bit cleaner and a bit more creative. It can be done. Back to the finals for just a second and the playoffs in general. And I promise we'll get to the offseason because we know people love the offseason rumor content. Was there anything about how the playoffs played out, how the finals played out, that makes you reflect on how the Raptors are building their team? And I'm sort of thinking, to be perfectly honest, about, you know, the collection of versatile wings, but you can take this in any way you'd like. Is there any way that... How have they played out? Made you think about the Raptors, either positively, negatively, or indifferently?
Like, it made me think if I was the Raptors, I would be absolutely kicking myself that I didn't have Gary Payton the second on this team. Like, I want him as a Raptor so badly.
To be fair, Gary Payton the second never signed with the Raptors. He was on the Raptors 905. But,
905, yeah.
But, which just means they got a closer look at him, but he never had a Raptors contract. So it's not quite the same as... like a guy being signed to a two-way contract and then not using him and then him exploding elsewhere. But yes.
But still, my goodness, I love watching him play basketball and I love everything that we've gotten to know about him off the court as well. I just think he's just awesome. And I know Raptors, you know, we want vision 6'9", tall, long players. This is the smaller player you want. Holy, have you ever seen a player of his size play bigger than him? He's incredible. I just love him. I love everything about watching him play. He makes things happen. And you kind of have to be like that if you're going to be a super undersized player in this league. And I think because his journey was so long and so winding, you're smiling and I'm not sure why. Is it because I'm talking?
No. Go on.
I think because his journey has been so long and winding and, you know, full of so many rejections, really, and setbacks. And also the fact that he's grown up with the game, like after the finals, Gary Payton, his dad, was with the NBA2B staff and was just saying this is such a cool moment for him. It was cooler for him watching his son win than him winning himself because he remembers him being with him, like being with the game as a ball boy growing up. I think like because of all of those things, and because he's undersized, like he had to become so intelligent to the game where he can see things and make them happen that like you wouldn't necessarily expect from a guy of his size. He doesn't make mistakes. He's such a good player and I loved watching him. And after Wiggins, he was probably my favorite part of the finals. He was just such a great story and I'm so happy for him. And I wish that he was a Raptor.
I think he might have out Fred VanVleeted.
Yes!
Just in terms of like he almost applied to be a video coordinator. Like, that's, I mean, Fred VanVleet would never apply to be a video coordinator because he would just assume whatever, wherever he landed to play basketball would eventually propel him to NBA stardom. So maybe that shows more self-doubt than Fred VanVleet has, which, you know, makes him more relatable to me. But but anyway, it's certainly an amazing story. And he's an awesome player, and he is a free agent. We'll get to that later. But you mentioned Vision 6-9, which I've also called Project 6-8 in my conversation with John Hollinger.
I think I just like Vision 6-9 because it reminds me of Vision and, you know, WandaVision.
Oh.
Never mind.
I got you.
I'm not sure if you've seen that.
No,
getting a Marvel episode this summer, no matter what we do.
Yeah.
Continue your conversation with John.
Yeah. Mention Project 6-8, Vision 6-9. A guy prominently involved with that is OG Anunoby, who, since we last talked at the end of the playoffs, has been in, you know, trade rumors, most prominently from Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report. Jake is catching a lot of heat for these rumors, so I'm just going to go on a little...
He's been catching a lot of heat the past couple weeks just for asking questions.
Yeah, let me... It's up to all reporters to decide what's worth running with and what's not worth running with. And whether you think what he reported is worth, you know, putting out there in the public, you know, I think reasonable people can disagree. But if you are going to use it, which he did, and like, of course, I'm going to defend fellow writers, but I don't think I'm being, you know, wildly out of left field here. Like, he did couch it in, you know, maybe this is other teams sort of willing this into existence to find like a multi two-way or a very good two-way player. Which, you know, is sort of my takeaway from the finals and the playoffs, is the more two-way wings you can have, sort of the better. You can't have enough of those guys, which is sort of the Raptors, you know, philosophy right now. And so, you know, if you are another team and you're thinking that these types of players are gaining value, and you look at the Raptors' future and you're thinking, oh, well, you might have to pay Fred VanVleet and you might have to pay Pascal Siakam, you're definitely gonna have to pay Scottie Barnes, is this guy gettable? That's where that stuff comes from. And I think if you're gonna mention it, which he did, I think, you know, him putting it out there that at least that a lot of it is coming from other teams and the Raptors are still enamored with him is the responsible way to do so. So with all that said, with caveated, what have you made about OG Anunoby's name in general being out there, I think most commonly linked with Portland and the 7th overall pick?
Yes, I think what I've made of these rumors and talks is the same reaction that most of Twitter has had, but just in a like toned down version, you know, like, as you said, I think one of the biggest things that gets lost when a reporter does this type of work is people often assume that if someone's putting something out there, that it's the only information they've gotten. And I think that just, of course, the average person reading something isn't aware of the amount of information that a reporter has and that they have to sift through before they decide what they're going to use, right? So, like, getting this isn't the only piece of information that he's heard. It's something that he feels there's some sense of weight or truth behind. He had the caveat at the beginning that, you know, other teams, cool. All that being said, I don't really think... it just doesn't seem, I think
I don't doubt that
conversations are happening and things like that, but I don't think that this is where the Raptors are going.
Yeah, I'm mostly in agreement with you, Holly. I think it's reasonable for other teams to be doing, I'm doing the math and sort of trying to figure out what can be done and what can't be if you're going to pay all or most of these guys. Mm-hmm. And it's reasonable that if I'm doing it, then other teams are doing it and poking around. What I think is far more likely than a multiplayer, maybe multi-team trade, is the Raptors taking this, you know, offseason, seeing if they get VanVleet or Siakam extensions mm-hmm. done, seeing how much this team can do with a little extra depth, probably. And next summer, you have a bit more information. You have the possible or likely free agency of Gary Trent. You have the possible or likely free agent of Fred VanVleet. And you have Anunoby one year closer to mm-hmm. free agency. Mm-hmm. And I just think, unless they're blown away by an offer, like even if you lose a bit of leverage the longer this plays out, you're probably erring on the side of wanting to see how this group develops together.
I feel like that, looking at the history of the Raptors in recent years, and especially under Masai Ujiri's tenure,
that's what he did.
I feel like he really likes to have, he's certainly not afraid to make a move at all, and that's a great thing, but he's not going to be rushed into making a move without having all of the information available. And I think he likes to have as much information as possible available about the players and options for the team that there could be. And I don't think that he would rush that unless something amazing comes along, like you said, and I just don't really see that playing out.
Yeah, and like a lot of, like the Portland trade would, not that there aren't ways in which you can improve mm-hmm. by trading OG Anunoby. I think it, like, you know, I remain pretty high on OG, but there's reason to have skepticism. And like, certainly, which I wrote about, if like he really wants a bigger offensive role on a team, and that was only sort of mentioned by Fisher again mm-hmm. under the caveat of, you know, this, he hasn't complained to the team about this. But maybe it's something that's being discussed on, you know, internally with him and his
right.
lovely agents at Clutch Sports. you know, it seems unlikely that he's going to become a second option on a team that has Scotty Barnes, who, you know,
right.
was the fifth or sixth option guy last year and is only set to grow. And then Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam. My favorite stat that I figured out doing this OG Anunoby piece, Pascal Siakam's usage last year, so he led the Raptors in usage, and I can't remember exactly what it was. It was something like 25.7%. But only two teams had top usage guys who had a lower usage than the Raptors.
right.
So basically it means like for a, you know, top option, Pascal Siakam doesn't shoot very much, which is, and you know, if he continues to improve upon last year, and you know, progress isn't linear, blah, blah, blah. But I'd say the likelihood is that he's eating up a bit more of the offense, not a bit less of the offense. And certainly true of Scotty Barnes. And even if like Fred VanVleet drops down a bit, like there's not a ton left over there in terms of, if you really want to change your role or your, you know, spot on the hierarchy of a team for OG Anunoby. And that doesn't mean he'll get opportunities to improve, and like they will put him in different places to improve, but like if you're only concerned about volume, I could see where the concern would be, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Does that all track to you, or am I
no it insane? Totally does. And it makes me think of another interesting thing that I always think about when stories drop about players having, you know, concerns or interests that seem opposite to how we view players. You know, like I look at the OG that we have gotten to know with the additional caveat that he makes it so that we don't really get to know him all that well.
That's the gimmick, yes.
Yes. But when I look at OG and think about all the things that he has said publicly to us, and the way he talks about basketball and the way he talks about his own game, never have I come away thinking, oh, that guy definitely is unhappy with his role offensively, or he wants to be like the number two guy, you know? But it always makes me think, when these things come up, we don't know anything about these guys that we dedicate our lives to covering, you know?
And the thing the case I was reminded of was...
Sorry, I'm coughing. My allergies have just been, like, out of control.
Yeah, I've been popping the occasional antihistamine, too. Like, Jeremy Grant, I remember when he signed that deal with Detroit to go from Denver to Detroit, nobody really thought Jeremy Grant was, like, really curious about what he could be in a high usage role. And that's not the only reason he signed there, but it does make a certain amount of sense that if you are good enough to be a really good player in the NBA, you're curious about how far that talent can take you and by extension a team. And if you're considering your next contract, which, you know, in today's NBA, contracts are only 4 or 5 years at most. So, you know, your agents, at the very least, are almost always considering your next contract, especially when you're in your mid-20s or younger. You might want to maximize the numbers you can put up. And that involves maybe having a different role. I'm not reporting that OG Anunoby definitely wants a bigger role. I'm just saying the factors are in place where it would make some sense. And I couldn't begrudge him that. But enough on that. I don't think it's likely. You don't think it's likely that Anunoby gets moved. So we probably...
Of course, us both saying this probably means a huge deal's coming on Thursday afternoon.
Well, as long as it doesn't happen when I'm at a wedding this summer, that would be great. Or on an airplane.
As long as it makes everybody involved happy is...
No, this is about me.
Is what
I'm involved, and this is about me. The NBA draft is Thursday. The Raptors, of course, have the 33rd pick. Time willing, I will have a piece up on Tuesday, if not by Wednesday, on the likelihood that the Thaddeus Young, which dropped the Raptors essentially from the 20th pick overall to the 33rd pick, what are like the historical probabilities? What do the historical probabilities say about that trade working out? The short answer is not a huge difference between the average 20th pick and the average 33rd pick over time.
Tomorrow's the longest day of the year. Did you know that?
I did. June 21st.
Yeah, tomorrow. That's tomorrow. I just realized right now, doing the math in my head of the days.
Summer solstice, baby!
Wild.
Cool.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them. You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
So the draft's coming up. Raptors have the third pick in the second round. A few weeks ago, I had an article on 9 names that could be potential Raptors picks in the NBA draft. The mock drafts, you know, there's always some surprises. There's pretty much a consensus on, you know, the 22 players or so who won't be available to the Raptors at 33, assuming they keep that pick. And then from there, we get a lot of guessing games because there are teams that are selling picks. There are teams that want to pick somebody, but would rather not have that player on the books this year. So I think, you know, beyond that, there's a wide range of players that can be had. Before we get into any specifics, with the 33rd pick and in the Raptors situation, that they're currently in, which I would describe as not hell-bent on being, you know, a championship contender next year, but they probably want to, you know, improve.
In the conversation.
Yeah, they want to, you know, maintain or improve while not giving up flexibility for the future. How, at pick number 33... do you veer long-term, or are you more intrigued with a guy who can help you sooner, keeping in mind, that at 33, you know, getting anybody who can contribute right away
is a win.
Give or take a Herb Jones, who I think was picked 32 last year. Like, it's unlikely. So how do you view the pick in that sense?
Yeah, whenever I hear you say things like that, which are true about the second round pick and the 33rd pick, I just go back to Gary Payton II because that's where my brain is right now. And I think you never know what you're going to get with a player in the second round or an undrafted guy because, hey, look at Gary Payton II. That's where my head and my heart is right now. And I don't think he's going to be in Toronto. So I just got to let Golden State continue to enjoy him. But yeah, no, back to what you were asking. I don't think you really think about it long term. I think that you just go with, if a guy that you like is available that you think has things that could help your team as is, as well as if you think he has parts of his game that you feel confident that your development staff could develop and further you know, improve his game, then yeah, I don't even think you think so much about specific fit. You just are looking for a talent that you could potentially develop and who can help your team. Does that make sense? Like obviously you want someone who fits, but like, I don't think at 33, you're not going to take someone just because of the makeup as your team right now. It's almost like taking a flyer on a player to me.
Yeah. It would be silly to draft for need for sure. whether you want to go like long-term project or shorter path to contribution. Mm-hmm. I think that's a more interesting conversation with this pick. Ultimately, I think you just gotta go with the guy you think you can turn into the best player and
who's going to be available. You don't know at that point.
Obviously. And whatever. I'm talking about, you know, the moment you're on the clock.
Do you have favorites?
So before we get to that, let me read the last 20 33rd picks to you, Holly. Are you ready to remember some guys?
Sure. I like remembering some guys.
Yeah. Jason Preston, 2021. Daniel Oturu, former Raptor, who played in the Cleveland debacle. The Cleveland,
Cleveland
COVID debacle.
That feels like that was this year and also 5 years ago.
Welcome to the pandemic. Carson Edwards, Jalen Brunson, probably the best name on this list.
Jalen Brunson, who posted an Instagram story in Toronto a couple days ago.
Oh, what does it mean? What does it mean?
It means he wants everyone to know he's in Toronto, that's for sure, because it was right at the CN Tower. Not sure if you saw that.
I did not. Wesawondo, Cheek Diallo, Jordan Mickey, Joe Harris, another hit at number 33, mm-hmm. Carrick Felix, Bernard James, Kyle Singler, Hassan Whiteside.
Oh, I loved Carrick Felix. Continue.
I can't believe you have a Carrick Felix take. I had forgotten about him. Full disclosure. Dante Cunningham, solid pro. Somebody who you wrote a long feature on, former Raptor, initials JD. Can you come up with it? 2008.
Joe Dorsey.
Yes. Marcus Williams, Solomon Jones, Brandon Bass, Peter John Ramos, Luke Walton, and Dan Gadzurich. The last two, actually, Walton and Gadzurich, are the guys who have spent the longest with the team they ended up on after mm-hmm. draft night. Both 8 years for both guys with the teams that wound up. A lot of tough ones there, but that's sort of what the 33rd pick is. And the 20th pick
isn't much
better.
Listen, man, it's really hard to make it to the NBA, and it's even harder to stay.
Yeah. Do I have favorites? I think the name that popped out when I was first doing this, and most mocks have him going before the Raptors, but it was Dallin Terry from Arizona. Mm-hmm. He just seems so Raptors-y. I forget what our pal Kevin O'Connor at the Ringer had him listed, and it was something to do with Scotty Barnes. I am looking it up as we speak. No, it was another player who had something to do with Scotty Barnes. Never mind. But his comps are Iguodala and Will Barton from Kevin O'Connor, and he's just sort of a high energy, high character, versatile defender with a long wingspan, and you know, a smart guy,
pretty decent shooter,
and like a better shooter than the Raptors usually start with. He is 20. He is a sophomore, so not quite the developmental curve that we're talking about a lot with freshmen or G League guys. So those would be my, I mean, he was the guy that's at the beginning of this process really jumped out and was like, this guy makes sense as a Raptor.
I would like the Raptors to draft Andrew Nembhard.
Yes. Go with it. I think he was playing for Team Canada when he was like 15.
I've just watched him play for so long and I just love watching him. Obviously, I love point guards, as you know. I got to profile he and his brother earlier this year together for a piece. Like, I've talked to Andrew before, but this was my first time talking to the two of them about the other. And oh my gosh, they're both just so lovely. They're just, I just wish them both great success. And I think it would be really fun if one of them became a Raptor.
It certainly would. Andrew Nembhard, the big talk for him was coming out of the Chicago Combine as he dominated the scrimmages. That immediately moved him up every mock draft from, for the most part, not taken or taken in the 50s to like high second round. We'll see.
I'm allowed to have a dream pick.
No, I'm not criticizing your dream pick. I'm just saying, like, if he doesn't get drafted, which we don't want, we want him to be drafted. But if he doesn't and he ends up on the Raptors summer league team, I don't think that's an impossible scenario. Same with Julian Champagne, Justin's brother.
Yeah, that's interesting too. That would be fun. The thing with Andrew is I feel like whatever, like if he doesn't end up being drafted, whatever team he ends up with this summer, I just feel like they're going to fall in love with them. Like they're just going to fall in love with them. That's my take on Andrew Nembhard.
So I think there are a couple of Duke guys, which is weird, Wendell, who could be in the Raptors wheelhouse or sort of selection. Wendell Moore Jr. Yeah. as well as Trevor Keels. Now, Moore Jr. was a junior. he went to Duke for 3 years. And he sort of emerged in his third year after a sort of slow start to his career as a bit of a do-it-all guy, like playing a bit of point guard, playing off ball a bit, a pretty key defensive player. He doesn't lack that, or he doesn't have that, you know, huge upside just because of
huge wingspan.
He
has
a huge 7 foot wingspan. But for an NBA,
and he can shoot.
And he had a good third year in shooting. I believe his numbers were down the first 2 years. But obviously he shot 41.3 from three this past year, which shows he could, you know, become a very solid 3-point shooter at this level.
Well, listen, in the Raptors' developmental system,
yeah, he'll be shooting 60%. The Raptors have never failed developmentally. Only hits.
Never. Absolutely never. Obviously, Andrew is my like dream heart pick, but for guys that I've seen kind of listed in the like near the Raptors at 33, I do like Moore Jr. Moore Jr. Yeah. I was like, why did you think that was confusing? And then when I said it myself, I felt like I was not.
Well, I'm saying it was confusing because he's also a junior. Which. Moore Jr., who was a junior. And Trevor Keels is more of, I believe Kevin O'Connor's player comp to him was Lou Dort without like the spectacular one-on-one defense. He's sort of like a 6'5 bully ball type player. And the way I described him in my piece was he's the guy who, when asked what position he plays, will most likely say, I'm just a basketball player.
that's awesome. Speaking of Lou Dort.
Lou Dort.
And Pascal Siakam were in Montreal for the Formula One race this weekend and got to see some great photos of them with some of the drivers. And yeah, it was pretty cool to see your boy, Max.
I was about to say, Siakam with my guy, Verstappen.
With Red Bull athletes.
Yeah, you love to see it. You love the brand synergy. Also, sort of in the running, a pair of centers, Christian Coloco and Ishmael Kamagate, I believe is how you pronounce that name. Coloco, who's also projected to go right, you know, late first round, early second round. His hometown, Holly, is Douala, Cameroon. Does that mean anything to you?
Well, I'm sure it means something to a very important member of the Raptors. Yeah.
Yeah. Pascal Siakam's hometown.
Yes.
So that would be
cool too. I guess at number 33, I mean, I'm always here for the draft day stories, always, Raptors or otherwise, but I guess at the 33rd pick, I'm really just here for the good stories. So yeah, give me someone who shares a hometown with Pascal. Give me someone who has a brother on the Raptors, Justin Champagne's brother. Give me Andrew Nembhard, because that would be awesome.
One last name I'm going to throw out there is Caleb Houston, I believe. I don't think
yes,
it's Houston.
That would also be really fun.
From Mississauga. At this time last year, like right after the draft ends and everybody comes up with their, you know, early 2023 mock drafts, his name would have been in the lottery at this point. And he had a disappointing year at Michigan. A lot of, you know, sort of highly scouted freshmen had disappointing years, and there is some belief that that had to do with COVID sort of limiting how much time these teams had together and everybody had to acclimate.
A very valid
I mean, who's to say, like, we'll see over time as like this class of players
it didn't develops. Not have an impact on teams' successes.
We just don't know what it says about their future potential quite yet, I guess, would be my point. Like, you know, there were players who transcended that and were able to still have impressive freshman years or above expectations, let's say, freshman years. So I don't want to say it's nothing, but he is also in the range. And if you would have said a year ago that the Raptors will be in a position to take him, you probably would have said the Raptors missed the playoffs. So that didn't happen. And it's interesting, and he is another Montverde Academy player, where Scotty Barnes played his final year of college. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the big names. You know, the Raptors took Bruno Caboclo
also
with the 20th.
Yeah, continue.
The Raptors took Bruno Caboclo with the 20th pick, so they'll probably take none of these guys that we've just discussed. But we'll be here next week to.
Oh, you know, the Clint Capella, that Bruno draft will always just make me think of Clint Capella.
Yeah, I saw his name in a potential Raptors trade rumor today.
DeLon Wright, I'm sure you would be a little thrilled.
Yeah, so because of our time constraints, I think we'll get into free agency next week. I have plenty of stuff up on the other. We're going to get to some reader questions, which will touch on free agency, but we'll do a fuller... I guess something can't be a more substantial free agency preview next week. And DeLon Wright is certainly one of the guys who could be in play for the Raptors. He makes some sense as a player coming off the bench for your Raptors. So before we say goodbye for now,
This felt really fast. That's, I mean, probably not to the people listening, because I've stolen this conversation from you to talk about movies and Formula One and everything under the sun. But I think it's because we haven't talked in a while. This is like flying by. Anyway, let's go. Reader questions.
So let's start with a guy that you've stanned for many times this year. Somebody asked specifically about a second round pick, but I'll phrase this from Charlie Bender. Does it make sense to package Malachi Flynn in a trade, or should the Raptors keep him and actually put an effort into developing him into a backup point guard?
Well, I mean, it makes sense if you're getting something that you really value or think could be valued back. I mean, of course, but... I don't feel like the team is like going into the offseason with the thought we want to move Malachi or like we've given up on Malachi. I don't think that's where they are, even though you may be a little confused as to where they're going or what their thoughts are based on this past year. But I think, again, we talked about Masai Ujiri being a patient person when it comes to building a team. I kind of feel like Nick is the same way with respect to like working with a player, developing a player, seeing how they fit, who they could become. I hadn't really thought about that, but I think that I just feel like the end of the season, you definitely saw much more from Malachi than you did when he wasn't playing. I mean, I was pretty hard on you about your grading him, and then he did play better at the end of the season. So I think it makes sense I think the team should still have faith in him, and I think they do. So I don't know if that answers the question.
No, I think that's basically what I would have said. He's not an impediment to doing something that they really want to do, but I don't think that's the goal. And he's at a low value point. So, let's not talk about them as assets, but from an asset management point or viewpoint, it doesn't make much sense. Rob, the real Mahoner, asks,
oh my gosh, that sounds so much like Rob Mahoney. Yeah. Is that his burner? Rob, is this your burner account?
Shouts to Rob Mahoney. which scenario is more plausible? I'll read this slowly because a lot of initials involved. A, move OG to shooting guard. GTJ, that's Gary Trent Jr., comes off the bench and you use the mid-level exception to grab a center. That's the first scenario. B,
okay.
Keep the starting five and use the mid-level exception to fix the bench. So a perimeter, more of a perimeter player.
Oh, that's the two options?
Those are the two options.
I think B.
I'm going to cheat. I'm going to say that I sort of think, as is now, Gary Trent will come off the bench next year, if I had to guess, assuming none of the core guys get traded. But I would say that Precious Achiuwa would be the starter, and they will use the mid-level or the bulk of the mid-level to sign a bench piece. Probably.
So you're saying A and B.
I'm saying a hybrid answer. Yes. Okay. If you will. Or A and B.
What were we doing with OG in that scenario?
He's the de facto shooting guard, but who cares?
Oh, okay.
He and Pascal and Scotty play the same position, right. Basically. Gotcha. And the last question, and this can be a little preview for free agency. What percent?
I thought you were going to say this will be a little treat. I was excited.
This is the last Raptors question, to be clear. And then I have one more question for you. From DS, Ramfan DS, what percentage chance would you put on Boucher and Thad Young being re-signed? Thanks.
Honestly, I think pretty high. I think a higher percentage, I think greater than 50%. But maybe that doesn't seem high. But I feel like Boucher will be back with the Raptors. Young, I think there's more room there, depending on what he wants for himself next year. Like if there's like a contending team that could want a veteran, I think that could be something that makes his decision. Like if he would like to go somewhere where he's going to have a long playoff run, okay, maybe. But if not, I also could very much see him coming back here with the Raptors. I think he liked his time here last season. I think he connected really well with the guys and the coaching staff as well. I mean, he's had such high words of praise for them. But I would say for both, I'm going to say 70%, 60% for both, and for Boucher, better than 85%.
I'm going to put Boucher at 65, Young at 40, and...
Damn, maybe I'm just too positive.
And both of them coming back, maybe 50. Right. And
see, that's 50 was where I was to start, and then I talked myself up.
And
this is why I should never be allowed to like bet, because
here are my basic thoughts, and we'll get more into it next week. Mm-hmm. But if I'm Chris Boucher, I'm probably looking to get as much guaranteed money and length as possible, term as possible. So the longer the contract and the more guaranteed money, probably the better. With that, if I'm the Raptors, I've written a ton about this, but you have so many competing sort of priorities that there's probably a hard cap on how much they want to pay both guys this year and into the future. I mean, in totality, mostly because they want to avoid the tax this year and won't want to handicap themselves in terms of
long-term for long-term. Sure. Yeah.
So with Thad Young, I think like they might say, okay, we'll give him $6 million or okay, we'll give him $7 million. But a lot of competitive teams who are over the tax will have that taxpayer mid-level exception at something like $6.35 million to dangle him. And, you know, doesn't he seem like a good veteran who can fill in a bunch of number of ways for, you know, your Dallas Mavericks, your Los Angeles Clippers, your Boston Celtics, name the team that's over, your Golden State Warriors, name the team that's over the tax and that wants to win. And I think he makes a lot of sense in that slot. So if he's deciding between $7 million with the Raptors and $6.35 million with another team and maybe a better championship shot, I think it becomes pretty complicated.
I want to revise my predictions back to where I was. This is my problem. I can be convinced. I can talk myself in or be convinced out of anything too quickly. I would not be a good GM for many reasons, but that's probably one of the greatest ones. Yeah, I'm going to go back to 50% for both and 70% for Boosh.
All right. Well, you basically just copied my answer.
I didn't copy.
Well, I said 65% for Boucher and 50% for both. So
fine, 50% for Boucher and
you don't need to change
80% for 80% for Boucher and 50% for both.
All right,
sorry.
All right. Last question. I have no idea to what this refers to, so hopefully you have some idea. Ryan P at Fat Gumby. Some good Raptors questions here already, though I'd love to hear Eric explain why re-sign and resign are as different in meaning as apart and apart, two words. we can't do that on an audio medium. That will get very headachy. He does have a Formula One question for you. Does racing need more local fauna invading the track?
Yeah. No, because it's really scary. During the practice sessions in Montreal, something like blew onto the track, or at first we thought it was something that like blew onto the track, and then it was a groundhog. A groundhog was like darting between the cars, which is kind of insane. Later in the practice, my brain is still basketball terminology. There was some litter, like a pop can was on the track as well. But yeah, the groundhog was kind of fun. Luckily it didn't die and get, you know.
My dog just hopped out of the car just before we recorded this podcast. We had parked and he hopped out of the car, but we didn't have his leash because we were like right next to home, and he ran immediately to a bird that was struggling on the ground, like a baby bird. And like, he didn't get him in its mouth, the bird in his mouth,
no!
But he did like make contact, and then the bird was lying there either in shock or dead.
Eric!
I hated it. I hated all of it.
Eric, this is not... No, that's awful.
Walter can't help it. That's his instinct.
I know.
The bird looked like it was struggling already.
Oh,
it was very upsetting. Walter. It was very upsetting.
Did you scream?
My wife did. I did not scream.
What did you do?
I was trying to tell.
Did you yell?
I was
did
trying
you
to
yell
tell Walter? Andy to grab his collar because she was closer to him.
Oh my goodness.
Anyway,
I love that my story is like, yeah, the groundhog went between multiple F1 cars and it survived.
Yeah.
And yours is like, oh, by the way,
here's a story about an animal who didn't survive, maybe
forever on brand. Eric
Green. We gotta wrap this up. Sorry to wrap it up on this note. We are more than likely to be back here early next week, wrapping up what the Raptors did with the draft.
Hopefully with a new Raptors rookie.
Looking forward to what's coming in free agency, which starts on June the 30th. If any trades come, obviously we'll talk about that. We'll hopefully keep our prologue to fewer than 15 minutes. That would be advisable. It's okay. People are here for banter, maybe. Maybe not. But until then, Holly, is there a race in Formula One this week? Yes, no?
Next week, not this week.
All right.
There's 3-on-3 basketball, though. It's been a very busy week for
Canadian basketball. Do you want to quickly plug what you've been writing about?
Yeah, covered the U18s, the Americas championship. The U18 boys won a bronze medal. The U18, I should say men, not boys, the U18 women had a very close game against the U.S. in the gold medal game last night. They lost by, I think, 5 points. So they came away from Argentina with a silver medal, and both of those teams qualified for the 2023 Basketball World Cup, which is very exciting. Under-19 World Cup. 3-on-3 basketball this week. The senior men's team will be playing some games next week, and then there'll be Global Jam, which is the huge basketball festival that's going to be happening here at the beginning of July. So super. Oh, and the under-17s are coming up as well, and you can pretty much watch all of these games. The FIBA games that I've mentioned, the under-18, under-17, that on YouTube, which is on FIBA's YouTube, which is awesome, and all the Global Jam will be on Sportsnet, so yay!
I believe that's Canada Basketball, no, basketball.ca, right? That's the website.
Yes.
Yeah. That's where you can find Holly's work.
It's been a super busy month, and a good month, and an exciting month, so, and now the draft, which I still cannot believe is here.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing some good suits. Holly, thank you for joining us. And let's do this again next week, huh?
Yay!
Everybody, thanks for listening. Be safe out there. And we'll talk to you next week. See ya!